Genesis 33 is where we're at. We are in the series called Leading Biblically. We are, I'm pretty sure, I know you heard me say this, and I'm going to say it again. We're getting close to the end of it. But it's going to be at least one more, but that may be it. I keep thinking, okay, this is the last one, but then I'm like, well, but I think this is a good lesson too. And so, but I know we have one more, and then that may be it. But this evening, we are talking about the principle of gentleness. Talking about leading biblically, this idea of gentleness. And we are in Genesis 33. We're going to start in verse 1 and read down to verse number 16. Genesis chapter 33, I'll begin reading in verse 1. You follow along, please. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and to the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. And he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. Now, if you know the story, there is some concern here because him and Esau did not leave on good terms. In fact, and I'll kind of paraphrase, the last words from Esau was, "I'm going to kill you." And now he's about to see Esau with 400 men. And in his ears is ringing, "I'm going to kill you." And so there is some concern here, and rightfully so, on Jacob's, in Jacob's mind going on. Verse 4, and Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept, which changes now things, and I'm sure Jacob's happy about that. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, who are those with thee? And he said, the children which God hath graciously given thy servant. Then the handmaids came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. And he said, what meanest thou by all this drove which I met? And he said, these are to find grace in the sight of my Lord. And Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself. And Jacob said, nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at thy hand. For therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. Take, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. And he said, let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before thee. And he said unto him, now that's what Jacob's saying, let us go, and let's go back home, see dad and all that. And he said unto him, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant. So this is Jacob speaking of Esau. You go ahead and go ahead of us. And then this is what Jacob says, and I will lead on softly, according as the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure, until I come unto my Lord unto Seir. And Esau said, let me now leave with thee some of the folk that are with me. And he said, what needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir. So we're talking about this idea, this leading in this principle of gentleness. And we see that really illustrated in verse 14. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant. And this is what Jacob says, and I will lead on softly. And that's what I'm talking about, softly, gently. So let's back up for a moment and kind of explain some things, and then we'll use some application here from this account. The pivotal event in Jacob's life, if you know anything about Jacob, happens in the previous chapter. So if you go back a chapter, chapter 32, and look with me at verse number 22. So he knows he's about to meet Esau, and so Jacob now gets serious. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons, and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched a hollow of his thigh. And I'll put in air quotes, the man who's wrestling with him touches the hollow of Jacob's thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, he, again being Jacob, there's a lot of he's being said, so sometimes it's hard to keep straight. So he said, Jacob says now, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name, he now being this one he's wrestling with, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of that place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. So this is the pivotal event in Jacob's life, where he wrestles with this angel and gets the blessing of God upon him. Now, anytime anyone has a personal experience with the Lord, obviously something changes. If you have a personal contact, and I don't mean in like this way, where it's a physical, visual, verbal, but I mean anytime you get serious about the Lord and you start reading your Bible and you start praying and you start seeking after the Lord, anytime that someone has this personal experience with the Lord, things are going to change in your life. That happens at salvation and it happens at surrender. Those are the two big experiences that happens in a believer's life. And so this is what happens to Jacob. He has this experience with the Lord, and now something changes in a big way. Well, it's illustrated in verse 28, and he said, thy name shall be no more Jacob. Now, the word Jacob, or the name Jacob, basically means supplanter or deceiver, but a better definition means heel catcher. That's what he did to Esau when they were born. He caught the heel of Esau. But it also has the idea of someone who trips you up, someone who deceptively uses things to get ahead. And that's the idea of Jacob. In other words, he's saying, Jacob, you're no longer this deceiver, this supplanter, this one who's always conniving and scheming. That's not who you are anymore. And he gives him a new name, and the new name is Israel. And the whole idea of Israel is a prince, or if you will, this God-appointed leader. So this pivotal event happens in chapter 32. He wrestles with the Lord, and because of that now, the Lord puts a blessing upon him, and the blessing is signified in the changing of the name. No longer, now that you've met with the Lord, now that the Lord has impacted your life, you're no longer what you used to be and used to do. Now things are different in your life, and now you need to live and lead like you're supposed to. And this is what's happening in Jacob's life, Israel's life. And the first thing that happens is in verse 14, really the first expression of this new Jacob, this new Israel, the first expression of it is in verse 14, where he says, I will lead on softly. So now he has a different attitude about some things because the Lord has made a difference. This idea of softly means gently. Now, another thing we see, let's go back to 32, and this is just trying to help us understand some, when we think about what we're going to think about in a moment, some background. So if you go back to chapter 32, notice what also happens. He touched a hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint. You ever get something out of joint? Does that hurt? It does. And if it's a foot or a thigh or a knee or something like that, it makes it very hard to move around and to walk. And now watch what happens. That's chapter 32, verse 25. Look at verse 31. And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. So we come back now to chapter 33 and verse 14, where he says, I will lead on softly. And he says, the cattle can't go too fast, and the children can't go too fast. Now watch, who else can't go too fast? Jacob. And one of the things the Lord did is this, he slowed Jacob down. Because Jacob was someone who, probably you can think of some people like this, he was going, he was always conniving, always scheming, always up to something. And God basically says, Jacob, you need to slow down and be thinking about some things here. And so when Jacob comes to this situation with Esau, and Esau says, let's go! And Jacob says, maybe not so fast. And what the Lord has done in his life has slowed him down, so he thinks about now those he's leading, maybe in a new light, and says, you know what, we're going to get there, But we're not going to get there on your timetable. We're going to have to be thoughtful of those that I'm leading. And so Jacob, in many ways now, is going to be changed by, in various ways. But one of the things that changes is this, his attitude about those he is leading. And so Jacob, God slows Jacob down, I think, in some ways, to so he can better understand those that he's leading. Now, how does this apply to us? If we're going to lead biblically, whether we're thinking, again, in our homes, Sunday school class, at work, bowling league, whatever you're leading, okay? Whatever, you know, the area the Lord gives you to lead. Or even as a follower, thinking about, you know, who our leaders are, because you can make some application there. But what would this teach us? Well, I'm going to give you several thoughts about this. Here's the first one I'm going to give you. Number one is this. Leaders must have compassion for those who they lead. You ever have someone who's your boss and you think they hate you? It makes it kind of an awkward situation. Like, I've had bosses who I think they would have been happy if I quit. And only for whatever reason, we just didn't work well together. And you kind of hate going to work because you think your boss hates you, and it's just not a very friendly, nice way. But a good leader who's leading biblically needs to have compassion for those who they lead. Now, watch this statement. This is a good statement. I like this statement. I don't know if you will, but I like this one. There is a place for competition in leadership. I like that statement. And there is a place, I mean, in leadership, there is a certain trying to, you know, propel ourselves, inspire ourselves, trying to motivate ourselves. There's a place for competition in leadership. It is, as a leader, and thinking about yourself and thinking about those you follow, it is good to challenge oneself, and I think by extension, challenge those who follow you. It is good to challenge oneself as well as those you lead. Okay, we don't want to be lazy. We don't want to just do the bare minimum. The reason we have spring programs, the reason we have fall programs, we're doing the same thing we typically do any other time, but we try to challenge ourselves and do more and encourage ourselves and motivate ourselves. So I think there's a place for this, for competition. It's good to challenge ourselves. Let me just show you a couple places in case you're wondering, because you may, well, that's just the way you think. Well, I do think that way, but I do think there's some biblical support to it. Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10. Look with me at verse number 4. And the next three references are all being Proverbs. Just be 1 in 10, 1 in 13, and 1 in 21. So just stay in Proverbs here for a moment. Proverbs chapter 10, look at verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. And there's an idea here that there's some motivation, some diligence, that's what the word is, diligent, trying to do some things and being slack or lackadaisical obviously is a negative there. And so there's a place now to challenge us. Let's go to chapter 13 and look at verse 4. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. In other words, all they want, all they do is they want, but they never put any action in behind that. That's the idea. But the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. In other words, you put some effort to what you want. And it's the same idea that there should be something that challenges us, that motivates us. Let's go one more place. Proverbs 21. And look with me in verse 5. The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of everyone that is hasty only to want. And so the whole idea is that diligence, motivating ourselves, challenging ourselves, there's a place in leadership for that. If you have followers, you want to try to motivate them. And the truth is, typically, we individually, we corporately can accomplish more than we think. Now, I'll say this about our church. This is my opinion, it may not be yours, but I think as a church corporately, as a church body, that we, and here's a phrase I use, we punch above our weight. We are fighting, you know, trying to fight heavyweight contenders, and we're kind of middleweight type of size church, or we're maybe featherweight trying to beat up the middleweights. So we do punch ahead of our weight, punch of our weight division. We try to do more. I mean, you think about what we do in missions, at times in even in mission conference, we do our big soul winning day, and all the different things we try to accomplish. And the whole idea is to challenge ourselves. And I think that we can accomplish more than we think we can accomplish if we put some little oomph to it and let the Lord use us that way. So I think all that is true. There's a place for competition. We need to challenge ourselves. But, and you knew there's a but coming probably, yet leaders should not be so invested in reaching some level or winning some prize unless it's the spring and we're going against North Coast Baptist Church and we're trying to beat Brother Lutz again. Then we must win, okay, at all costs. We may not have a church left over, but at least we'll win. So, a leader should not be so invested in reaching some level or winning some prize that we overlook the condition of those we lead. We shouldn't be so invested if all we're doing is go, 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 push, 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 and we're just trying to get things done and never consider the people, and we're abusing them and overworking them, and they're getting all burned out. That's not right either. And so we do want to challenge people. There is a, and I use competition, I guess, in air quotes, there is competition that can be beneficial, but we don't want to so push people that we abuse them in that way. It would have been, I guess, if Jacob and Esau said, okay, let's see the first one to get to Seir. And maybe Jacob could have beat Esau, but at what cost? He would have ruined his entire family, all of his things that the Lord has given, all the herds have been, all the cows are dead, all the sheep are dead, all the camels are dead, the wives and the kids are laying there, and here's Jacob. I won! I won! But at what cost? And so I think we need to understand, as leaders, when we're leading people, we need to consider that accomplishing something in and of itself is not the main thing. We got to consider those we're leading and trying to accomplish some things. Now, the flip side. I have two statements. You only have one. Let me push a button here. You got two? You got two. So I got two, you got two, but the thing only has one. Okay, we'll blame it. Compassion, you have this statement probably. Compassion is never an excuse to abdicate our responsibility to lead. I don't know what the blank is there. Let's see. Gentleness, nope, wrong one. Compassion, there it is never an excuse to abdicate our responsibility to lead. I apologize for that. Didn't pop up on the PowerPoint. That's my fault. Compassion, even though it's important, but it never abdicates. We can't be so compassionate to the people that we don't lead them. Okay? So now follow me here. It wasn't that Jacob wasn't going. It's just Jacob wasn't going at the same pace. He was still going. So when we talk about compassion isn't that we're not going somewhere, we're not trying to accomplish something, or we're not trying to do something. So compassion is never an excuse to abdicate the responsibility we have to lead. Rather, bingo, gentleness, now watch this, is not about the direction of leadership, it's the pace of leadership. Now I'm going to give you an illustration in a moment, maybe to try to help you understand this. So we're not saying that we're not going this direction because it's too hard. Oh, this is too hard for the people, so we're not going to lead them this way. No, this is the right way to go. And let's use it in a church setting. Maybe a little easier to understand. So in a church setting, if it's right to live holy and right to go soul winning, it's right to tithe, if all these things are right, then these are the things we're supposed to be doing. But the pace that we get people doing those things may not be what others are doing, because we got to consider the people we're leading. So the direction is not in question, but the pace of that direction is what we're talking about. Compassionate, gentle in the pace by which we're pushing them. Go back to chapter 3, look at verse 44. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly according to the cattle that goes before me, and the children be able to endure, until I come unto my Lord and see her. In other words, he's still going that way. He's just going slower because they can't handle the pace. So a leader should never compromise what is right for the sake of his followers. But a leader should show compassion for the condition of the followers as he leads them. Okay, now I want you to get this because we tend to go in a ditch here, one way or the other. Either we don't care anything about the followers and we just say, do, go, 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 here we go. And they're burning out and they're falling apart because we got to do these things. Or we go the other side is we're so concerned about them that we don't do anything. We're just like, oh, we don't want to put any pressure. We don't want to make them uncomfortable. But if you're going to go a direction, at times you got to make people uncomfortable. You got to put some pressure on them. You got to tell them the things that have to be done. But you got to consider their condition when you're pushing them that way. Now let me give you an example. Maybe make a little more sense to you. I'm going to give you three churches: Church A, Church B, Church C. Okay, and I'm going to ask you a question. Here's Church A. Church A has had a long-time pastor. It's a soul-winning church, okay? So this pastor, let's say he's been there 25 years, and this is a soul-winning church. They, just like us, they have people who go soul-winning. They have maybe various soul-winning ministries. They have missions. Soul-winning is a part of what that church is doing for the 25 years. And now, just because of the process of time, a new pastor takes over that church. Okay? No negative to say about it. It's just this one guy retires, the next guy takes over. It's a good, smooth process. Okay, here's the question. Should that church keep going soul winning? Yes. All right. Church B. Again, a soul winning church. Just like Church A. Church B is a soul-winning church. But in this case, something happened. It could have been a foolishness on the part of leadership. It could have been immorality within the church. Something happened. Things blew up. Maybe some folks left. Feelings got hurt. And there's a whole new leadership taking over the church. There's a whole new pastor taking over. Previous leadership is gone. Okay? It was a soul-winning church. Something negative happened. And now the church is maybe only half the size, maybe a third of the size. People are there, they're kind of still shell-shocked by what happened. Whole new leadership taken over. Here's your question. Should that church go soul winning? Yes. Church C is a good church. It's not a soul winning church, but it's a good church. They basically are conservative. They hold to the most of the doctrines, but they've never been a soul-winning church. They're not anti-soul-winning, but they've never had a leader who taught them to go soul-winning, or told them to go soul-winning, or preached about soul-winning, or who did soul-winning. They're not bad people. They're saved people. They're kind people. They're nice people, but they're not soul-winning people. A new pastor takes over. Should that church go soul-winning? Yes. The direction doesn't change. But watch this. Now listen. But do you think it would be different in each one of those cases for that pastor? Very, very different. If you're Church A, and the church basically is already, you know, rowing and rowing, and everyone's going soul winning, and the one guy who says, let's go, let's go, let's go, and all of a sudden he's gone, and the next guy stands up and says, let's go, let's go, let's go, and they just keep doing it. That's a pretty easy situation. But in Church B, where they just blew up, half the people are gone, maybe two-thirds of the people are gone, people are shell-shocked, they're wondering what's going on. Can I tell you, even though they're still supposed to go soul-winning, but that's a difficult situation. They're dealing with some spiritual hurt. It doesn't change what their responsibility is, but it is going to change how you lead them. You're going to have a certain gentleness about them. Because they were doing those things, and their whole world got turned upside down. They still need to do those things, but you got to consider, okay, the direction hasn't changed. Let me tell you, the pace has changed. Because a lot of those people who were, yeah, 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 are now like, oh, what in the world just happened to us? Church C is another unique situation. Good church, never gone soul winning. A new pastor takes over. He's going to lead them go soul winning. But these people have never gone soul winning. They don't know really anything about soul winning. You still got to lead them, but it's not going to be like Church A because Church A is already soul winning. Church B at least knows what soul winning is, and they got to keep at it. Church C is like, soul winning? What's soul winning? What does that mean? What is that? Like, what? And so, wait a minute. We're actually going to go and confront people at their door? Are you nuts? Yes, I am, but that's what we're going to do. So what I'm saying is, in each of these situations, there has to be a gentleness, an understanding, and the pace of each of those are going to be different. The direction hasn't changed, but the pace has changed. So when you're leading someone, you have to have compassion. You can't simply say, this is right, this is what we're going to do, just suck it up and take it, because I have a responsibility in leading them the right direction, but also have a responsibility of considering the journey and make sure I don't overburden them and burn them out as I'm trying to get them where the Lord wants them to be. So leaders must have compassion for those who they lead. It's very important. Number two, go with me again to chapter 33, look at verse 13. And we're really looking at the same event, because that's the whole crux of this lesson is verse 14. But we're kind of moving each time and trying to look at it in a different light. So we're going to look at it slightly different again. So we're talking about the leader having compassion. Now let's look at it in a slightly different light. Verse 13. And he said unto them, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds with the young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Now, what had happened was, either Esau said, let's go together, and then later said, hey, I'll give you some guys to help you. Well, the problem was this. These guys, that's not their family, that's not their herds, they're headed home. So their desire is to get home as quick as possible. And it's quite possible that the pace by which they're going to go is way more than the pace that the others can go. Even though they're all going the same direction, they all can't handle the same pace. So that brings us to our second thought. And number two is this, not every follower can be led at the same pace. That's even in a church situation. Someone comes in, they get saved, they're gung-ho and on fire. Someone else comes in, gets saved, just as much saved. If you're saved, you're saved. There's no different levels of salvation. You're either saved or you're not saved. But you'll find that not everyone is going to be moving at the same pace in the things they're supposed to be doing. Now, why? Well, we talk about people, there's different reasons. A follower's background, things that happened in their past, their character, that's a big one, and their motivation will affect the pace of his followership. If someone has come from a background where someone was really harsh in their leadership, and now they come into a church that's trying to motivate people to do things, there may be a standoff. But wait a minute, I've been in situations like that. Let me think about what's going on. Is this like I just came out of? And so their background's going to play a role. And they may be a little hesitant to get involved. Character plays a big role. You know, if you don't have enough character to get out of bed in the morning and come to church, you probably are not going at a very fast pace in your Christian life. And then motivation, trying to explain to them why we're not doing this for a name, we're not doing this for recognition, we're doing it for the Lord and having the right motivation about things like this. All this affects the pace of someone's fellowship. Now watch this statement. And that pace will change at various times in his fellowship. One thing you find out when you pastor over multiple years and pastor the same people, that at this point they're going kind of fast, at this point they're kind of going slow, and then they're going fast again, and then they go kind of slow because there's different things happening in their life. Sometimes they have no control over. Sometimes, here's the reality of it. Okay, I love our church. I love the spirit of our church. We have a wonderful church. But we don't have perfect people. We have people, and people backslide. Now, they may look the same coming in that door every single Sunday, but they're not the same every single Sunday. And for some time in their life, they're gung-ho and they're excited, and other times in their life, they're carnal and they're not involved. And then they get right with the Lord and they get going again, which is why you don't give up on them. You're always praying for them. You're always encouraging them. But the truth is that pace changes at various times. Not every follower is going to be led at the same pace at every point in their life. And the same thing is true even when people come in. I mentioned about the background, their character and stuff. I'll give you an example about it. One that I learned early on, and I'm glad someone taught me this. I have a friend. His name is Ken Shaver. Ken Shaver started a church outside of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, Greater Cumberland Baptist Church. Now his son-in-law pastors it, and he pastors another church in Kentucky. Good guy, though. He's outside of Fort Campbell, and Brother Shaver at one time was at Fort Campbell when he was in the military because he flew Blackhawks. And so that's one of the reasons that his heart went back to that area. So he's starting a church there, and he's got some military and some civilian. It wasn't a ministry to the military. He started a church in that area trying to reach military and civilian, and his church was like 50-50. At least when I talked to him at this point in time, multiple years ago, it was 50-50. And I said to him, I said, Brother Shaver, what's it like pastoring people who are military versus people who are not military? Is there any difference? What do you think? You think there'd be any difference? He said, big difference. He said, it's a huge difference. He said, when I have military people in the church, and if I ask this guy who's in the military to do something, typically, 9 times out of 10, I get the same response. Yes, sir. End of conversation. He said, when I talk to someone who's a civilian and ask them to do something, I get the typical response. Well, why? How long do I got to do it? How much is it going to cost me? Really can't find anyone else? You sure you want me to do it? Let me think about it. I don't know. Now, he said, it's not that one is right and one is good and one is bad. He said, the military guy, that is what he's used to. When you go in the military and someone says, you know, go do this, and you say, really? Let me think about it. Hey, Colonel, I'll pray about that. Okay, we have a special place. We call it the brig. You have time alone to pray. He said, that's their background. It's not that I'm not saying that the civilian should have the same attitude as the military. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is their attitude is based on their background. Where the civilian's never been in that type of situation, so he has a different response. And so you have to understand not everyone can be led at the same pace. They have different backgrounds, different character, different motivation. You have to understand that about them, and that changes at different times in their life. And so I'm not saying one is right and one is wrong. I'm simply saying they're different. Now let's go back for a moment to Esau. Esau and his men, they had no family with them. They had no wife, no children. They're just men. These are and they seem like military type men. And they didn't bring any flocks, they didn't bring any herds. And so the pace that they would go would be military men going back home. And that pace was completely different, and as far as it'd be a lot faster, a lot more hurried, a lot more intense. That pace that they would set, fine for them, would be too much for Jacob's company. So, with that thought in mind, it is the leader's responsibility to know the pace which his followers can endure. And not every follower can endure the same pace, which is my next statement. That pace may not be the same for every follower, yet every follower has a pace. Let me just say this. The pace by which you can do in your Christian life is not necessarily the pace that others can do. They may do more, they may do less. Now, watch what I'm about to say. You are not the standard for which everyone else is supposed to follow. Our standard is the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, he sets the direction. And probably none of us, probably all of us can go at a faster pace than what we think we can. But our job is not to go around through the church and point to everyone else and say, how come you're not doing more? How come you're not doing more? How come you're not doing more? Our job is to look to the Lord and say, Lord, how much more can I do for you? And let the Lord, in fact, Paul says this, let the Lord judge us. We're his servants. And let's make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And as a leader, wisdom is required to help each follower attain that pace and achieve as much as he can. Brings us to the third and final thought. Brings us back to chapter 33 and back to verse 14. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly. According as the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure until I come into my Lord and the seer. So, I'm saying the same thing three different ways. This one I've kind of pretty much said, but they just put it in a statement. Number three is this. Gentleness is an important spiritual quality in leadership. It's not an excuse to be passive. It's not an excuse to be compromising. It's not an excuse to do less than what you're supposed to. There is a place for gentleness in our leadership. Now, the world does not really promote this type of gentleness, this, and I'm thinking of in a spiritual quality way. They don't look at it that way. Most of our media, we think about movies and TV shows, they kind of promote a hard, demanding, roughshod type of leadership. You know, I like watching John Wayne. John Wayne, you know, if I was sitting down in front of the TV and someone said, you can only watch one movie, I'd say, okay, put a John Wayne on. Okay, I like John Wayne. Let me tell you this, but John Wayne's not a spiritual leader. You know, what John Wayne can do among a bunch of cowboys is not how we're supposed to deal with people on a daily basis. We don't deal with our kids that way. Now, to be honest, I used a lot of John Wayne statements with my kids, and they were like, what? Never mind. But it was funny on the movie. But we don't treat our kids, we don't treat others that way, because that's just a movie, okay? And you get away with it because it's a movie. They're all pretending. Okay, so we don't want a hard, demanding, roughshod type of leadership. It may make us feel manly. It may make us feel, hey, look at me, I can just boss people around. But you're not leading them. And you're not compassionate as the Lord wants you to be. So even though leaders must be firm and decisive, that is true, but they also must be gentle with their followers. We can do both. We can be both firm and decisive on one side and gentle on the other. We can do both of these. Let me show you what I mean. Go with me to Galatians 5. Let's just look at some verses about this. So again, we're not talking about, well, I'm no Nancy. I'm just stand up, tell people the way it is, and they can either suck it up or they can have it with one lumps or two, but that's just the way it is. Okay, that may make good preaching. That's terrible leading. Okay, we need to be considerate of people. God has given you a responsibility over people. And he didn't give you that responsibility so you could beat them into the ground. He wants you to encourage them and lead them. Again, not being wishy-washy, not being, I'll use in quotes, a Nancy, a passive type of leader, but gentle, concerned, you know, with a true compassion for those you lead. Galatians 5. Galatians chapter 5. When I say spiritual quality, you probably, your mind went to this. Galatians 5, verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering. What's the next word? Gentleness. It's a fruit of the Spirit. It's a spiritual quality. Go with me to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. So my point here is to show you this is a spiritual quality. This idea of gentleness, this is a right quality to have. Doesn't make you weak. Doesn't make you wimpy. It just makes you right and spiritual. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, look at verse 1. We'll just read down to verse 8. For yourselves, brethren, know our entrance into you that it was not in vain. But even after that we had suffered before and were shamefully entreated, as you know at Philippi, we were bold in our God to speak unto you the gospel of God with much contention. For our exhortation was not a deceit, nor of uncleanness, nor in guile. But as we were allowed of God to be put in trust with the gospel, even so we speak. Not as pleasing men, but God, which trieth our hearts. Notice, there is a definite leadership here, definite direction going on. For neither at any time used we flattering words, as you know, nor a cloak of covetousness, God is witness, nor of men sought we glory, neither of you, nor yet of others, we might have been burdensome as the apostles of Christ. But, okay, so there's direction, there is a hardness as far as them doing what God has told them to do. Okay, there's determination, that's what I mean by that. But notice what else is in verse 7. But we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherisheth her children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were willing to have imparted unto you, not the gospel of God only, but also our own souls, because you were dear unto us. So yes, a determination to bring them the gospel, to do what God has called them to do, but a gentleness in his dealing with them. James chapter 3. Let me show you one more place. James chapter 3, verse 13. James 3, verse 13. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and a strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that maketh peace. So this is a spiritual quality that should be in our leadership. Now, just repeat what I've said before, just to emphasize it. Gentleness does not stop a leader from pushing a follower to accomplish a goal. That's part of leading, that little encouraging, pushing. But it understands that not every follower will be able to handle the same amount of pushing. Or we can say it this way. Gentleness seeks to individualize a follower's treatment out of compassion and concern for the follower. You know, if you have multiple kids, you know this to be so. One child, something happens, you can just kind of look at them or say, no. And that's it. And they may start crying. And that's all you did. You just said, no. And they're like, the other kid, you look at them, they look at you. You say, no. And you can see in their mind, they're thinking, I said, no. Okay, here we go. I'm coming over there. Now, you have the same rule for both, but one needs a little more pushing. Okay? So I'm just saying, gentleness individualizes that. It's the same direction. It's not always the same pace. All right, let me finish up. We're kind of running out of time here. Gentleness in our leadership comes when we understand that people are an important resource. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I'm talking about in a good way. People are important. And they must be cherished and nourished. They're not just a way for us to get something done. They're a resource. There's something the Lord has given to us, and we have a responsibility to them. Now, this gentleness will not change what we are trying to accomplish as leaders, but it may change how we're trying to accomplish it. The what doesn't change, the how changes based on, you know, leaders and trying to bring them along. Jacob's purpose of leading stayed the same. They're going back to Canaan. The pace he led them by took into account those who were following him. Which brings us now to our last statement. May we as leaders be firm and committed in our direction, but may we also be gentle and compassionate with those we are leading in that direction. All right. Well, let's pray and let's ask the Lord's blessing.